Some people think a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. And when he gets home, he wants to dial to a sound and a station that'll make him smile. 660 will make you forget how tired you are and how deep in debt. So when you tune KFAR, just relax and listen wherever you are.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is April 19th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We'll spend the next hour with Emily Curley Avakoff, born on December 28th, 1895. This morning's presentation is sponsored by Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Larson's Jewelers, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank, and Last Frontier Realty. Good morning and welcome to the studios of KFAR Radio. Emily Curley Avakoff. It's nice to have you here this morning, Emily.
Thank you, Gail. It's nice to be here.
You look so nice.
Thank
you. You have a beautiful blouse on with a bow, and your hair is lovely, a beautiful shade of silver, and you have floral-shaped earrings on, and you look the vision of spring loveliness today.
Thank you.
I mentioned just a minute ago that you were born December 28th, 1895. Now, there's no doubt in our minds that it was December 28th. Is that correct?
That's right.
But are we certain that it was 1895? Tell us a story about the little bit of confusion on your birth year.
Well, I was born in Chicago, and I had a brother that was 14 months older than I, supposedly, and a sister that was 10 and a half. My sister always wanted to be younger. My brother wanted to be older. So it's been a conflict in the family all these years. Am I 84, 85, 86 as we came along? My birthday usually was spent in arguing as just how old I was. And I was born so long ago that I never did have a birth certificate.
So they really don't know for sure.
I'm never too sure whether I am going on 90 or I've had my 90th birthday.
Well, being born right at the end of the year on December 28th probably added to the confusion.
Definitely.
Because I've been saying for some time that you were 90 already, but...
We're not too sure.
You could be.
Yes, according to the way I have been figuring all the way through, I am. I just had my 90th birthday, including... these card and so forth from Nancy Reagan in the White House, so I don't want to spoil that for her.
You were born in Chicago. Tell us a little about your family history.
My father was an attorney. Well, he was a Confederate in the Confederate Army, but when I knew him, he was 50 some years old when I was born, and so I only knew him until he was until I was about 5 years old. So I don't know too much about the family except what my mother could tell me, and I was pretty young at that time, and I grew up not knowing too much about the family. But I know that when I was born, my father was with the Chicago Title and Trust Company and had been all his life from the time he left the Army.
Fought in the Civil War.
In the Civil War.
On the South Side, uh-huh.
And
his name?
Was George Washington, as everybody was at that time. Everybody had a Washington, George W. Curley.
Is that right? Huh. So George Washington, a lot of boys were named that in those days?
Uh-huh. Huh. Like so many boys are being called Larry now. And at that time, all the boys that I went to school with had a Washington in them someplace.
Gee whiz. And interestingly, your mother's name was Martha.
Martha.
Uh-huh. She was born in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C.
Huh. And a little bit about your grandfather, Major Gwynn.
That was my grandmother's family, Gwynn family.
Uh-huh.
And he was sent over to Russia years ago and designed the whole underground. This is all, as far as I know, it's all things that I have heard and read,
uh-huh.
Not directly from anybody in the family. And he designed the whole underground of Petrograd at that time. And I have been there. And it's frightening to think the depth that they went that many years ago, two and three things of the steps that we would go stand on, and they'd take you up to the streets up above. And that is out at the museum, the Russian Museum, and we were not connected in any way with the Russians, though I'm ending my life with the name of a Russian.
Uh-huh. Harry Avakov.
Harry Avakov.
You went to New Freer?
I went to the grammar school in Wilmette, Illinois,
uh-huh.
And then there were about four towns that all went to New Trier High School. There was Wilmette and Kenilworth, Winnetka, Glencoe, and no, that's where they quit. And we all took a streetcar at the cost of 3 cents a ride to get to high school.
Oh, my goodness. Now, did you graduate from high school?
Yes.
You remember
and I also enlisted at Northwestern University, but I got married instead of continuing any father. I was 17 when I, well, really, but this is another dispute again, 16 or 17. I would have been 17, I think it was, when I married an older man in his 30s.
Uh-huh.
And so then again, we started with the terrible age affair. Was I 1 year older? He wanted me to be a year older. Again, the family wanted me to stay younger, but I still am either 90 or will be 90.
And you married George Thomas Mullen.
Thomas, his name was Mac Mullen, but when his family came from Ireland, Scotland, they dropped the Mac, and I went all through life as Mullen.
Now, interestingly, your husband, although several years older, I understand, had the same first grade teacher that you did.
My brother and I.
Oh, your brother?
Yes. No, he was from Iowa. And that picture I was showing you one day was from our first grade teacher, my brother and I both. And that, again, of course, brought up the dispute, should I stay in kindergarten or should I go on to first grade this year? What age was I?
And you still remember that teacher, though?
Oh, my, yes. And I have a picture at home. She says to my dear little Emily and George from their first teacher, Harriet Harper.
My goodness.
I still have the picture.
Now, your husband, George, what did he do?
He was an auditor with the Chicago Northwestern Railroad.
Uh-huh.
But at the time that I met him, he was a telegrapher of the road and traveled back and forth from Milwaukee to Chicago. And shortly before we were married, he became the auditor for that same section.
I'm going to ask you a little bit about the Times then. You mentioned to me, about sports. You talked about crochet and tennis, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, of course, at that time it wasn't considered ladylike to go bathing unless you had stockings on.
You mean swimming?
Swimming.
Okay, you had to wear stockings?
Oh my, yes. You didn't let your legs be bare to walk from the boathouse out to the lake, and we'd paddle up and down. We always wore stockings.
Huh. How, and crochet?
Oh, the crochet work, yes. Even though you were tiny, you learned to crochet. And by the time they had, during the first war, I was advanced enough in my knitting that I took in the sweaters. Everybody was knitting sweaters for the Army.
Uh-huh.
But they had to be examined to be sure that they, when they had so many stitches for so many inches and so forth. And I've ripped many, many shoulder things that didn't turn out just quite right and just added on just because I had learned it as a youngster.
And so this was World War One then?
That was World War One.
And all the women were knitting sweaters and sending them to the servicemen, the doughboys?
Yes.
And how about tennis? Did you ever play tennis when you were young?
Oh, I know. That was very unladylike. My girls, my daughters played when they were in high school. But at that time, we had a croquet set.
Uh-huh.
And we were allowed to play croquet. Once in a great while, we could get boisterous and play clap in and clap out, where you'd clap somebody's hand and then run before they'd catch you. But you, that was a pretty, you were a pretty gay little guy when you did that.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to take a real quick break and be back with Emily Avakoff on Meet a Pioneer. We'll hear from our sponsors, the Riverboat Discovery and Two Rivers Lodge.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a Pioneer. KFAR Radio is proud of this show, and we're proud of our sponsors. Take it from Ag Baba, folks. One of the greatest pleasure trips you'll ever take is a trip up the Chena and Tanana Rivers aboard the Riverboat Discovery. It's scenic, it's fun, it's a little adventure back into Alaska's past, a real riverboating adventure, guided and informed by lifetime pioneer Alaskans, the Binkley family. The Binkleys, three generations of riverboat captains on Alaskan waters, whose knowledge and love of Alaska is unsurpassed. Try the Riverboat Discovery, and when your trip is complete, you'll feel like we do here at KFAR. It's a joy to speak of the Riverboat Discovery, and it's a pleasure to do business with the Binkleys.
Meet a Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. My guest in the studio, Emily Curley Avakoff. You wanted to make mention of something during the break, Emily, you mentioned?
Just about the young man that brought me here this morning. I don't drive anymore. And this Danny somebody that picked me up, and he was most
Danny
gracious.
Cruz.
Just a fine young boy.
That's nice. Well, I know they appreciate you mentioning that, and we appreciate them doing that. It's a special
service. I've called him a young boy instead of an older boy. I don't really know, but he was so gracious. I appreciated his courtesy.
That's nice of you to say so. You have two children. You had two children?
I had two little girls by the time I was 20. And they're both gone. They both died very young. One was 27 and the other one 38 when they died. And so I put a lot of my effort into cancer work. Both of the children, though there was cancer on both sides of the family, I think they didn't have much chance to escape it. But they were so young. And
your younger daughter, Mildred, was just peeking onto a brilliant singing career.
She was with the Chicago Civic Opera at 7. And by the time she was 12, she was singing with the, coming in the opera with the chorus. Though she was much too young, she couldn't get paid for what she was doing at that time because she was too young.
She was a featured dancer with the Chicago Ballet.
Mm-hmm. All the trios and duos and so forth that they had on, she was always one of them.
Mildred Mullen, she was married to Philip Crane, and
yes.
They were the singing sweethearts? Or
they were, later on, when they grew up, they were out in Seattle, and they met in college, of course, and when they were out in Seattle, we went out for their wedding, and they were voted the most popular singers on KIRO, and they had a nationwide week on the air and a week's visit in Al Pierce's show.
In California?
In
broadcast from California, was it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Across the nation?
Went all over, just like you were on one evening that I listened to you at midnight, remember?
In New York City.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Well, losing her at 27 at any time, but at such a young age of 27 was difficult. She had one child at the time.
She had a baby 7 months old.
Those who know you've lived in Fairbanks a long time probably very familiar with your work for the American Cancer Society.
Yes, I think so.
You served a state office?
In Illinois, a state office in the Eastern Star.
Uh-huh.
And that at that time, I was the state chaplain for the cancer group that we had. It was much more active than the cancer group seems to be at this time.
Uh-huh.
And when I was the grand officer during the Sarah Daniels regime, which is way, way back in 29.
My goodness. And you've been very active, of course, in Fairbanks and the state of Alaska.
Oh, I just loved every bit of it. I had to get away from my memories. There was no use talking. I couldn't go back to being with the same people that I'd been with all these years when my children were little and going to parent-teachers associations and church practices and so forth and so on.
You lost your husband in 1944.
Yes, and I blamed myself so much for that because instead of going home at noon from the, we were having a Methodist church luncheon, and it was my turn to have charge of the kitchen that day. And if I had gone home at noon, instead of that, Betty Wells and I stayed and had lunch at the church. When I went home, my husband had dropped dead down in the basement. And I just felt here I was doing my work for the church. And I used to stand there and say, God, how dared you do this to me? I was doing your work when I could have saved my husband had I gone home. And I was bitter, really bitter, getting so that I didn't want people to stop in and talk because I wanted to do nothing but talk about myself. And that's how I started my career, was everybody begging me to do something instead of staying home. But as I say, I never had worked before.
At the time, what was the attitude of women working? How did you feel about it?
Oh, it was terrible. It was a disgrace to your husband. You were supposed, when you got married, you were to keep the house, and I was perfectly happy doing it. And at that time, I just felt I had everything. I had a beautiful new home. It wasn't a great big place. It was only 8 rooms at that time. And a brand new car standing in the driveway, and I come home to an empty house. And I still dream over those days, which is very bad. But life has been good to me in many, many ways, such as ending up here in Alaska, where people have been so marvelous.
It was your work that you got into after, as a result of the situation that brought you to Alaska, and what was that?
Well, all I did, Martin Victor had a fur company down there, and he heard that...
In Highland Park, Illinois.
In Highland Park, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And he heard that I might be able to answer telephone or help in the office. And so when he talked to me, I said, well, I can't. I've never worked. Well, if I would just come and try it and see if I liked it. Well, I knew nothing about working. So if they said, it's time, let's go eat, we all ate. And if they said, it's time to answer the telephone, we answered the telephone. And I really think I was so dumb that he thought I was smart. And he decided that he and his sister and brother owned the business, and I think they needed some added touch at the time that he was breaking out and coming up here. And so I was going to go there and answer the telephone. And it was really a wonderful experience for me. I stayed with him and coming up here opening shops and had my headquarters in Juneau.
Now, wait a minute. He asked you if you would come to Juneau to open some shops for him? Go up to Alaska.
I was to go up and look it over and see if I would, and with the understanding that I wouldn't have to stay any more than 6 months and then come back home for 6 months and he would switch and come up here.
Did you say yes immediately, or were you apprehensive?
No, I talked it over with the girls, and they thought I was really disturbed enough that I should try it.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, I met Martin's mother, and she was just precious. She was right there in the shop with us. And
so you got to Juneau, Alaska. About what year was that? Do you remember? In the 40s?
Yes, it had to be in the 40s. Uh-huh. The first time that I came up,
yes,
just looking things over, in 44. And then again, I came back in 46. From then on, had stayed on.
When you got to Juneau the first time, did it live up to your expectations? Was it what you expected it to be?
Well, it was raining per usual in Juneau. And we all stood out on the front of the Princess Liner that we came up on. That is a group of school teachers that I had met on the boat.
Uh-huh.
And we stood out in the rain waiting to see the igloos.
You really did, huh?
Oh, yes. And we were really wet by the time we got in, but we had to be the first ones on board to see the igloos, not knowing that there weren't any.
Now, where did you stay during those first 6 months in Juneau?
At the Baranoff.
You lived in the Baranoff?
Yes. And there were about 75 permanent guests there, and it was just wonderful for me. I had no memories. And you never were alone. Nobody ever stayed in their rooms at night. We all came down to the lobby. We had a lot of wind at that time. And so when we had the wind, we'd play marbles down in the lobby. And always somebody to do something with. You were never alone. And that was such a help.
When you were living there, it cost you about, I think you told me, $75 a month?
$75 a month.
Huh. And how much were you making for Martin Victor for this work you were doing? Do you remember?
I believe I was getting $350.
Uh-huh. Did you meet any people that you remember in particular while staying at the Baranoff working in
Juneau?
Oh,
yes. You knew everybody when you went into the breakfast room or the luncheon or whatever it was. You said good morning to everybody in there. And the one person that I met and knew quite well was the president of the university up here. And I'm going to have to ask you to tell me what that name was again.
Charles Bunnell.
Charles Bunnell. Well, he and I didn't have to go to work as early as everybody else, so we usually sat at the same counter and having breakfast. Shortly after we got up here, I'm jumping a little bit, they had this big affair for Dr. Bunnell, and he sent somebody with an invitation for me to come, and I thought, well, he knew my husband, and that's why they were going, and I thought, well, I was so new up here at that time, I better not go, so I said we wouldn't go.
By then you had married Harry Avakoff, and he'd invited you. Okay.
Yeah, that was in the very, very beginning.
Right.
That's a big stretch of after I went home again and came back again before I met Harry.
Okay, go ahead.
And Dr. Bunnell brought down a picture the next morning. He had given pictures out for everybody, and that's the first time that I knew. He was down in Juneau lobbying for the university. And that's the first time that I knew who he was. All this time, I thought he was just another.
You were having breakfast with him and talking to him. You didn't know who he was.
Not with him at the same counter. No, I wasn't dating him, I can assure you.
No, but just kind of chatting. And
oh, we talked back and forth to everybody.
Huh.
And until I got up here, I didn't know who he was.
Gee whiz. Tell us about the pineapple sodas.
Well, I was going to open my headquarters down in Juneau. And Papa Goldstein was an old furrier that used to come up in the territory up here and buy furs.
Uh-huh.
And his wife was one that didn't like staying up at night. And he always came down to join the rest of us down in the lobby. And he never did get to call me anything but girl. I wasn't that much younger, but he thought I was. And so each night before he'd go upstairs, he'd say, girl, how about having a pineapple soda with me? Well, I think I had one for about 5 months. And I thought if he asked me again, I didn't like to hurt anybody's feeling. And I was glad to have somebody pay attention to me because I was alone. So I told him this night, I said, I'm not going to have another pineapple soda. I can't drink another one. He said, well, you can have any kind. He said, I didn't know you wanted anything different. So from then on, I had any kind of a... But he was an awfully nice old man.
Gee whiz.
And I got to know a lot about... He took me through the vaults and showed me the many, many, just hundreds of different kinds of furs hanging down there. And I got really interested in it. Then it was my turn to go home.
After 6 months, you went back to Illinois.
I went back to Illinois, and pretty soon Martin needed somebody back up here again, Mr. Victor did. And we never called him Martin, and he never called me Emily until after I was all through working. He was always Mr. Victor, and I was always Mrs. Mullen or Mrs. Myers. At that time, I was sent back, and... The mayor of Highwood, Illinois, was a widower, and I had known him, but not knowing enough to have dates with him or anything. But anyway, he came in one day and saw me and decided that that was who he liked. And for the next 3 or 4 months, he took me out for dinner every night. And sure enough, before it was my turn to come back, I married John.
John Myers.
John Myers. With the understanding that I had to come back to Alaska. I had to come back and see the friends that I had made down in Juneau and Anchorage and so forth as I shifted around.
Uh-huh.
And one night when I was over in Anchorage, and I put in the furs over in a shop called Betty's Shop. And when I went to, I was all through with business, and I was going up to my room, and nobody was around like there was in Juneau. We just went in and was with everybody. So I sat down in a little, on the outside of an elevator, and just sat there. It was on a Saturday evening. And this man came in, and he said, "Well, for goodness sake, what are you doing up here all alone?" And I said, "Well, I didn't know anybody. I was a sales lady that was over in the section." So he pulled up a chair and sat down to me, and he said, "And where are you from?" And I told him I was from Chicago. Well, I spent the whole evening till midnight sitting there talking. He would tell me about Alaska, and I'd tell him about Illinois. And the door opened, the little elevator opened, and a woman came in. She said, "For goodness sake, Cap, where have you been all night?" And he said, Marion Dickey was her name. "Marion, come over here and meet this young lady from Chicago."
Oh, goodness.
And that's how I happened to know Cap Lathrop. He was killed shortly after that when he was in an accident. But he, again, it was such an unusual meeting with somebody that was very important up here that I would never have gotten a chance to meet, just as a new little person up.
Goodness.
And that's how I happened to know Cap Lathrop. He was killed shortly after that when he was in an accident. But he, again, it was such an unusual meeting with somebody that was very important up here that I would never have gotten a chance to meet, just as a new little person up here.
We're meeting Emily Avakoff on Meet a Pioneer. We're going to take a quick break and be back in just a moment.
Dr. Carol Davis wishes to take this opportunity to inform her patients and all her new friends from Meet a Pioneer that the offices of Denali Chiropractic Clinic have moved from their former location at 3525 College Road. You're invited to visit Dr. Davis's new offices at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field, or you may call Dr. Carol Davis at 456-5252. That's Denali Chiropractic Clinic, now located at 1018 College Road.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. My guest is Emily Avakoff. Well, you met some very interesting people during those early years.
Definitely.
Now, you had married John Myers with the understanding you were going to come back to Alaska.
Yes.
Did that work out?
I knew John. I went over to the bowling alley with some girls one night. And John was had retired at that time. And so I was keeping score for the girls in the bowling alley, and this older man came over and asked me if I would have a cup of coffee. So I waited till the girls came back from bowling, or standing there, you know, and when little Sally came over, and I said, "The man that is sitting over at the counter has asked me to have a cup of coffee." And I said, "This is all right. Do you think it's all right if I go?" And And she said, oh, heavens, yes, that's the owner of this place. She said, you can feel honored. So I said, well, what'll I do? I'm old-fashioned at this time, remember. I don't think I had ever paid anything except through checks. And I said, well, shall I offer to pay? Oh, no, she says. He stays up there most of the time now that he's retired. He was with the Bowman Dairy Company for years. And then when he retired, he opened this 16-lane place in Highland Park. And I was talking to a fellow from Kenosha the other day, and he said when he was stationed at Fort Sheridan, he remembered bowling in this alley, and he said, but he said something about having a drink, and I said, oh, we didn't have any liquor in Highland Park. He said, no, but it extended up into Highwood, and the back of it, you could go in back of the bowling and get some drinks. Well, neither one of us drank anything, so I never dreamt that there was anything connected with it, but it went up into Highwood.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm telling you, this is...
Now, did the two of you plan to come up to Alaska then?
So that's
after
what
you married?
He said. I said, each time, I've said I would never marry again. I said that after my first husband.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to eat your words. There's no use talking. So John said, if that's the way you feel about it, he said, let's get married now, and then I'll take you back to Alaska. So... He bought me a nice new car for a present, and we started out. We decided to go to Mexico first and then go up the highway up into Alaska. Now, that's with John.
Uh-huh.
And so we went down into, ended up in Miami, and oh, I must tell you this. Everybody was fishing over the causeways, and I was not a fisherman. I didn't even know enough to see if my hook was bent and was losing fish. And pretty soon I got a great big fish on, but it was a steel rope, a steel line that I had. And the fish was kicking, and I was the only one that got a fish. Everybody was just standing there. And so I waited a little while, and I was afraid I was going to lose it. I couldn't hold on to it. I wasn't strong enough. And so I kept saying, John, help me. John, help me. Well, that was considered. I understand later that that was a real unsportsmanship thing to say. But anyway, he didn't help me. He stood back there, and all day that we were in that park, I'd hear somebody say, John, help me.
Oh, dear.
So I was anything but a...
They rubbed it in, huh?
Oh, they really did. Oh. And the only one to catch a beautiful fish, and it did get off my hook, you know. And, of course, I blamed everybody on the beach or the causeway for doing it if they hadn't been watching so closely. I'm sure he would have helped me bring in the fish, but
sure.
I lost it.
Oh.
Well, we started out anyway, and... We're going out through California and headed up for Alaska. And I had some neighbors that had lived in Glencoe, very close to me. And we had to stop as we were going through Kelseyville, California. And Hattie and Adolph George had moved out from Glencoe out to Kelseyville. So we stopped to see Hattie and Adolph. And they decided that if we were going on, that we were going uptown to buy something at the bakery. She said they had a beautiful bakery up there, and we had just about anything there was. So we made coffee, and we're having coffee, and John said, we aren't decided as to what we were going to do anyway, but he said, I'd like to buy something out here. And they assured us that there wasn't anything to buy, that it was just given from one family to another. So we bought the coffee cake. And as we went on around the other way to go home, Hattie said, there is a man that has a chance to buy into a rope factory, and he doesn't have the money. He said, I bet you could look at his place. Well, we switched and turned in at this place, which was 3 blocks back off the highway. And it was a cute little ranch house, very, very new, and with big windows, and we got out, nobody was there, and got out and looked through the windows and everything and decided then and there, this is what we wanted. So the following Monday, Adolph and Hattie went with us, and we started back for Chicago and did a lot of business and bought the place over the weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it wasn't very long. John had a heart attack. Each weekend, we would go either to, we bought the place and moved in, had all new furniture and everything, and had things coming out from our home, his home and my home. And he took sick and died on the way. I was only married to John for 21 months.
And you had changed your plans, decided to live in this home in California you fell in love with over the weekend. And
bought it. Well,
gee whiz.
That was the first ranch that we bought. So then we only had the one car at that time, but we were trying to move in. We went to Santa Rosa and bought a lot of furniture, just in fact, so much so that they gave us a couple of beautiful big mirrors as gifts for furnishing a whole house.
Oh.
And so, of course, when we got settled, we had two vacuums and two of everything. All of our things came in. Well, we were crossing over into, I'm trying to think now where it was. You know, I've been up and down that highway about 12 times, and it's kind of hard to describe just which section we were, well, anyway, they called me from the hospital and said that John, we were there long enough that we had the best part of a year by this time that I'm telling you. And they said that John wasn't very well, that I better come in. And each time something turns up that I wasn't with them. And as I was driving in from Kelseyville into where the hospital was, that I'm getting a little confused trying to think this out.
We'll take a quick break here. This is our final break. I'll be back with Emily Avakoff. When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
20 years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and First President Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first Board of Trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
Time always flies during Meet a Pioneer. My guest is Emily Avakoff. Emily, your life is long and full, and it's hard to talk about everything in 1 hour, and we won't get it all covered, but you lost your second husband after a short period of time. It completely turned your life around again.
So
what did you decide to do then?
Well, Mr. Victor called me day after day and wanted me to come back, and I said, no. I said, my life is just broken in so many places. And he said, well, we could drive up the highway. And, of course, that was little Denny Victor, who was about, I would say Denny was about 9 or 10, maybe even 11. And up the highway we came, and I've been here ever since. But when I did get here, I was taken over to the Chamber of Commerce one night for a party, and I met Harry over there. And the next morning, he had his store, and I had mine on 2nd Avenue, too, at that time. That is, the Victor store was there.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, Harry stopped in to be sure that I was telling the right story, I guess, from the night before. And he had a half of a watermelon with him. And he brought it to me, and I said, oh, goodness sake, I love watermelon. But I said, we could buy them 3 for a dollar, and I bet they're down in California. I bet they're very high here. And he said, $5. I said, $5 for a watermelon? He said, half.
$5 for half a watermelon.
Half a watermelon. And I think every time anybody came through and knew that I was living in the hotel, at this time I was at the Nordale Hotel, and each time that anybody went past my store, I think they brought me food. So one night I was coming out of the hotel. The really reason that I got to know Harry was, and he said, good evening, Mrs. Myers. He said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going over to, and mentioned a certain bar. And he said, you can't go there. You don't even drink. And I said, no, I'm a teetotaler, but the girl that is singing over there, I have met, and she stops in every day to see me, and she's a very lovely person. And he said, you can't go over there alone. He said, but if you insist on going, I'll take you. I'm going with you, is what he said. So we turned and walked over to this particular bar.
And who was singing? Do you remember?
Uh-huh. She later married Jack's Bar, the owner of Jack's Bar. Well, I didn't know. She was a lovely person to know. And she never spoke of drinks or anything like that. But over to this bar was on 1st Avenue at that time. And the two of us walked in. And she said, I'm going to sing a song from a very dear friend of mine that's just coming in with Mr. Avakov. So, of course, everybody looked, because Harry wasn't married at that time. And she sang Beautiful Brown Eyes. Well, I was never so shocked in my life. She was dressed so differently than I had known her, you know. But she was a nice person anyway. But that was my introduction to the business section.
No, what was her name?
I'm trying to think of what her name
okay,
was.
Okay, if it comes to you in the next few minutes, you just interrupt and let me know.
She later married somebody that had Jack's Bar.
Okay.
And huh. I don't know where that was.
I bet there's people in our audience know. Maybe you'll think of it in the next few moments. Now, when you had come here and you were working for Martin Victor and living at the Nordale Hotel, who were some of the other women you got to know living in the hotel?
Oh, well, of course, Mildred Herman had her own home in town, but she lived down at the hotel at night, and we always knew what was going to happen at the legislature the next day. And that's how I got especially interested in the cancer up here, through Mildred. I was the commander under Mildred for 4 years up here.
And Eva McGowan was living there.
Oh, Eva McGowan and O'Neill.
Edith
O'Neill and myself.
Now, Edith was known as the Oregon mayor.
Years before.
Uh-huh, right.
And she was a lovely older lady.
Uh-huh.
And Eva and Edith and I shared a bathroom on the second floor. And only once in all the time that we lived there that we ever interrupted each other. We all had such different dates. Well, Edith was older, and she was not too well at that time. It's hard to think of anybody being older than Eva and I, and I thought Eva was an old, old lady.
No.
And here I am, way past her age. But our association was so great, she had to go by our store. By that time, I had married Mr. Rabikoff, and she had to go by our store.
Tell me a little about your courtship with Harry.
Oh, well, that was a very fast one, too, you know. Each time, I would advise people never to say, I'll never do that. And each time I have said, I will never marry again. I've had a wonderful life. I'll never marry again. So when I'm always telling people what to do now, thinking I'm old enough to give advice, I say, don't ever say you won't get married again if you don't want to. Because that never turns out right. But I've been very happy up here. And I always had said at one time, I wouldn't marry a foreigner because the men dominate, and I was used to being my own self. And I wouldn't marry a short man. My two other husbands had been over 6 feet. And I wouldn't marry an Alaskan because I wouldn't. They just lived a different life than I did. And it's just, each one fit Harry right on the head, and I married him. And I certainly didn't make a mistake. He was a wonderful person.
Harry Avakov is certainly a pioneer, very well known. Passed away in 1973. And a jeweler. He had a jewelry store at the corner of Cushman and 2nd, was it?
Yes, and then later we tore down the building right next to the co-op and just built a new building where the coin shop is now.
Many of the things that Harry made are priceless and well-known. And one thing that he did was the ivory bone that he had carved and inlaid with gold and an inkwell and different things that had been presented by our city, I believe, to President Taft.
Mm-hmm.
That was made by Harry. Now, you worked in the shop with him, ran the business with Harry?
I did, and I kept it open for a year. Better than a year, as long as we had any of his things to sell. And then it got so that it was a case of buying from the retail or the wholesaler and selling. And at that time, the family wasn't too, well, you know how you talk things over, and we decided the thing was to close the shop.
Uh-huh.
But I still like to sell.
You are good. You are good now. You're a wonderful salesperson.
I like to sell.
What is it?
You just get the. I just have the feeling if you walk up to my window and you're looking at something that's oval, I'm not going to try to sell you something that's square. And you get the impression that somebody comes in, they look at some particular thing. And it was just, Harry always said that he'd had some good sales girls. But he had never had anybody that picked up the business like I did. But I love to sell and buy. The girls will buy me things and bring them home. And now, the women, I should say, they're not girls. And the women that are up here have been marvelous. I've just had somebody with me and calling me every day. And I just don't think there's a home big enough for any two women to live in.
When you first came up here, KFAR Radio used to announce the arrivals of visitors people, and you were announced upon your arrival.
Well, Maury Smith was here at that time, and each morning they were trying to, well, I guess they were working up trade to, you know, to have people on the air, and he'd say, by the way, people, folks, have you stopped by to see the new lady that's over in the fur shop on 2nd Avenue. She's new from Chicago. She doesn't know anybody. And I think it'd be great if you'd stop in and talk to her. And about 8 o'clock that first morning that I heard the announcement, Lena Phipps walked in. She was through with her night work over at the Pioneer Hotel. And I still know Lena and Lila May, the two sisters. And I've listened to every one of these broadcasts until I really got talked into. I thought I wouldn't do this, that my life wouldn't be as interesting as somebody else's. but I've enjoyed it a lot, Gail, and I'm glad you persuaded me to do it.
So am I. This is wonderful. Emily Avakov, this fascinating story. You're very, very interesting, lovely, and it's been a pleasant interview. Our sponsors of Meet a Pioneer include the Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Larson's Jewelers, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank, and Last Frontier Realty. Emily, it's been a great pleasure. We have just 2 minutes left.
Well, I'm glad that I've gotten this out of my system. All the girls have felt that this should happen, but I think perhaps I hesitated doing much of anything like this because of the episode I had with Wee Willie. I knew them as youngsters, he and Lee Russell. And so I was talking on the private phone one day to Wally. I can't call him Mr. Wally because I thought that was for Walter. And he said to me at the end, we were looking for a place to put up this cancer society. And so I didn't realize that I was on the air at all. And he said, Emily, tell me why you don't like me. And I did. So I didn't know whether he'd ever speak to me again. I told him they were two flighty kids running around here like a couple of youngsters and so forth. And next day I was going down to the bakery for breakfast and little Dick stopped me on the street and he said, you certainly told the radio station off this morning or yesterday, didn't you? And I said, how do you know? And he said, you were on the air. And I said, I was on the air when I said all these terrible things. So anyway, we are friends again. We do speak.
You've been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
From ABC News, I'm Kate Dorton. There is yet another compromise being spoken about on Capitol Hill over aid to Nicaraguan rebel Contras. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Richard Lugar says the new plan, agreed to by the White House, would make $14 million in aid, which the president seeks, available as humanitarian, not military relief. But the compromise would let the CIA draw on its own contingency fund to resume military aid to the Contras. There currently are restrictions on that. Also on